Prophet, peace be upon him, the role of women is so, so much highlighted. And the example is for sure Lady Khadija Salamullah alayha. So before we get into some more of details, I would like to have some introduction upon this great lady.
You know, first, if I want to talk about the great women in Islam, and I really agree with the point that you mentioned, that sometimes our religion is labeled as the religion of not supporting women, mm-hmm. and the religion in which women are just being limited. Even historically speaking, our religion started from the time that women were being disrespected, and our Prophet,
sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, not just disrespected, women were killed girls just because they are girls.
It was our Prophet who started this fight.
Exactly.
Who started this, although he faced too many disagreements
and adversaries,
too many
and enemies, too much of it.
He was the one who started this fight. Mm-hmm. And but not going to the details of what ups and downs he has experienced in those years. Going to Lady Khadija, salamullah alayha, we can say that she was the first believer in our religion. She mm-hmm. was the first follower of Prophet. And not talking about even the Prophet's aspect, like being the Prophet and having the spirituality of God. She was the one who decided to be a real devoter for this religion. She was the one who defined devotion for us. She was the one who defined a sacrifice for this religion. She was the wealthiest woman in her own time, and she just decided. She had too many people who were just fighting to have her beside, but she was the one who decided to be in this religion, to follow this religion, to believe in our Prophet, and to live this way.
Exactly. And it's very interesting how much she has contributed to this religion. Like, even before the mission of the Prophet started, she was a great supporter to him, just because she found him this trustworthy man, this man who is already known for his honesty. So she picked him as the one she's going to support as her husband, and then she practiced whatever love she has confessed. Like, to be a woman, to be a wife of a person who has got nothing, and then you be a wealthy woman, it's so difficult to actually practice whatever you have confessed.
While at the same time, that boy, that man is labeled as someone who is acting strangely in a society.
Yeah.
Like, you're losing your own community, you're losing the support of too many people around you.
Exactly.
And at the same time, you choose to lose your wealth at the same time.
Yeah, you're doing all this in the name of Islam, actually.
Yeah.
Islam, which was not known too much by people of the era.
That is both surprising and at the same time mm-hmm. Giving you the vibe of being proud of
exactly.
this person.
It's
of
a matter of
woman.
Pride, really. She's such an inspirational woman.
Yeah.
For all the women out there, just imagine. Well, we'll talk about that after the break. Let's go for a short break, and then we'd come back to see what's more. Yes, welcome back. You're listening to Muslim Lady. We're talking about the great lady, Lady Khadija Salamullah alayha. And then, already, I guess everybody knows about the biography. Like, she was one of the wealthiest and richest women of her own time. And then she married the Prophet before him, actually starting his prophethood, just because he was the one who was known for his honesty and being such a trustworthy man. Then she married him. And after the prophethood of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam has started, she became this great supporter to him with his soul and her money, of course.
The other aspect of her true nice personality is that she was in real love, you know. She was even there to teach us the true meaning of love. Like sometimes these days, sadly, we see the definition of love being changed. Like love for gaining something.
Exactly.
Love for achieving something. Love for being more successful, mm-hmm. having a living in a better class of society. But she was the one who went in the opposite
way. In today's life, actually, yeah. It is labeled as love, but what you see is more of a materialistic trait.
Exactly. It's just it's a life being led by mm-hmm. Greed, by, I don't know, the seek of attention and these
yeah.
stuff. But she kind of changed the whole mindset. She mm-hmm. started a revolution within girls and women, which was just being led by her. She was the one who was the leader.
The inspirational lady.
Yeah, exactly. She was the one who started this. She was the one who taught us mm-hmm. the true meaning of love. Even though you're not going to achieve anything, you're not going to gain money. You're also, not only you're losing money, but also you're losing your community at the same time.
Exactly.
You're losing support of the other
yeah.
people at the same time. She changed this structure and kind of ruined the stereotypes around.
Exactly. There was a time in which the prophet went through a hardship. Like, actually, there was different phases to that, but there was this hardship that they were gathered in a special place. So in that time, it was the hardest and the most difficult era of the time in which she was living with the prophet. And then she lost actually everything.
Yeah, it's like...
And it's actually not lost. Maybe I have to rephrase my word. She actually
devoted
everything to him and gave away everything
yeah,
just for her religion and for the prophet she trusted so much.
Yeah, it's just the case of the society's idea that we are repeating the word lose, but she was at the same time devoting everything
exactly.
for the sake of achieving something that something so beautiful called
and it was
Islam.
A sort of donation, actually. She was the starter
yeah.
of that. She
yeah,
was the
she
one
was...
who started the whole story. And by the way, by mentioning her, the great thing about her is that she's not only the grandmother of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, like she is the grandmother of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, of Imam Hassan alayhi salam, and she is the mother of a daughter who's been the actually queen of all the ladies of the world. Like the daughter through which the entire existence of Ahlul Bayt has started. Like she is the root to whatever we have in our Islamic heritage. So these are really great stuff to be attributed to a woman.
Yeah.
Just imagine what a great and devoted lady she was to gain such a place and a status in her life, to be the mother of Lady Fatima salamullah alayha, and to be the grandmother of the kings of heaven.
You know, it's like she was the frontier of the good. She was the frontier
exactly.
of everything that happened, every nice thing that happened to us afterwards in Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm saying she was the leader of women. She was
exactly.
the one who started this nice way of improvement for girls, women, and for especially Muslim women.
And as paradoxical as it might seem, for those people who accuse Islam of oppressing women, she was a great businesswoman of her own time. Like, she could actually work as a role model for all the ladies out there, like in the modern world. She was a virtuous woman and at the same time a great businesswoman.
Yeah. And an independent
a tycoon.
Woman.
And independent, of course, yes. So she could actually work as a great role model, as a paragon of goodness, and at the same time as a lady who's independent and who's got a lot of people to worry about, to work for their benefit, actually, and a lot more.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
she's also the sign of independence for us. Like, she was the one who, at a time that girls were killed, nobody was respecting the girls.
Exactly.
She was out there to be independent. She was out there working and staying against all those beliefs mm-hmm. that you're a girl, you're not going to work, you're not going to be successful. And she achieved everything. And she, even in this case, even it's very nice that even not considering Islam, in the case of the social matters, she proved that women can be successful.
So if we want to outline what kind of messages the lifestyle of Lady Khadija Salamullah alayha is going to convey to other women, what would you mention to us?
You know, not considering Islam at first, because she was already rich at the time that she decided to devote everything mm-hmm. to Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. The first thing was that she was independent, and that independence and hard work was the first theme, was the first definition, was the first message to all of us that mm-hmm. we can be successful, we can work, and we can be independent. Afterwards, after the after her marriage with Prophet, we can see the very clear, big message of devotion. She was being the devoter of her wealth, of her life, for the sake of a very beautiful thing called our religion. Mm-hmm. The other thing was sacrifice. She was just sacrificing everything. It's so nice that she was sacrificing as we previously mentioned, the support of the people around and the support of community for the sake of the improvement and for the sake of being the big leader of the of this religion, without even knowing that she was going to be the leader. You know,
exactly.
It's so hard. At that time, she knew nothing. She didn't know that she's gonna be our role model. That thousands of years later,
just she did everything out of her devotion and commitment
and
to the love she had.
In
and
return. Yeah, it's very nice that she. Yeah. No one promised her that you're gonna be the prominent leader. You're gonna be talked about a lot in the future.
Exactly.
She expected nothing. She just worked. Studying about her just paves our way through learning a lot of things, the things that are sometimes not taken into account these days,
exactly.
The things that are disregarded these days.
But I'm just saying that for years ago, like so many years ago and so many centuries ago, such a perfect lady lived among women in an era in which people did not care too much for the women's right. And then she was the role model for those stuff. At a time when nobody knew anything about such stuff, she was there, and she actually contributed a lot to the realm of womanhood, to how you could be an independent, great woman and inspirational, and at the same time devote yourself to your own religion.
Yeah, and expect nothing, you know? We
yeah.
have too many motivational quotes that are saying,
exactly.
when you choose your way, close your eyes and just work and go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But thousands of years ago in our religion, we had this prominent woman who was closing her eyes, choosing her way, and following the good, following the thing
exactly.
that she believed was going to be mm-hmm. the right thing.
Closing her eyes actually to all the difficulties
yeah, exactly.
that came
and
into their way.
And to all people who were just disagreeing, trying
mm-hmm.
to stop her from her belief and were trying to just mislead her.
Exactly. So, this is all the time that we had for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Mm-hmm. Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
the limelight.
Shortly before midnight on Sunday, 14th of April, the Islamic Republic of Iran launched a swarm of drones and missiles at the occupied Palestinian territories in response to the Zionist regime's cowardly airstrike on Iran's consulate building in Damascus, Syria, on 1st of April. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. Iran's retaliation against the Israeli attack on its consulate building in Damascus, Syria was not totally unexpected. However, the meticulous planning and massive scale of the attack marked a watershed moment and the beginning of the end of the occupying Israeli regime. A powerful message was delivered through a barrage of missiles and drones fired at midnight from different Iranian cities, which sent shockwaves in the power corridors of Tel Aviv. The Iranian armed forces first launched the Shahed 131 and the Shahed 136 type drones, widely filmed as they flew over Iraq. These drones needed about 6 hours to reach their target. About 4 hours after the Shahed 131 and Shahed 136 drones were fired, Iran's Parveh land attack cruise missiles were also launched for simultaneous landing in the occupied Palestinian lands. Both types of weapons represent the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps Aerospace Force's lowest-cost, long-range strike assets. Their task in this operation was to force the enemy to spend its resources on them, committing its air power and spending significant more expensive air-to-air missiles to intercept them. Here, the higher speed of cruise missiles and their unknown quantity forced Israeli, British, Jordanian, and potentially French fighter jets to use air-to-air missiles instead of guns to save time. The cost ratio between the assets that Iran committed to the operation and the Israeli regime required to counter it was massive. Israel's fear of its GPS jamming not working against drones and cruise missiles led to the costly decision of intercepting them kinetically. 5 to 10 minutes before the surviving drones and cruise missiles were to reach their intended targets in the occupied Palestinian territories, Iran launched the main weapons of the True Promise operation. The ballistic missiles were not launched simultaneously on purpose to reduce the shock effect on Israel's missile defenses. Surviving drones and cruise missiles put additional stress on the radars and sensors, creating completely different targets at lower altitudes. These involved ballistic missiles Emad, Qad, Desful, and Khaybar Shekan. The quantity of the launch missiles remains unknown and could range between 60 and 120. Descending from space like meteors, Qadr and Emad ballistic missiles would have first faced Israel's Arrow 3 missile interceptors, as well as the US SM-3. Those older Iranian missiles mainly defend themselves with inflatable decoys in space. The expensive and advanced American ANTPY-2 could have helped Israel's missile defenders to identify which objects were warheads, which empty spent boosters, and which were decoys. The 20-year-old Qad missile may have created confusion for the radars, as well as guaranteeing their survivability by releasing submunition payload while still in space. In the chaos of ballistic missiles' re-entry vehicle housing the warhead, spent booster stages and submunitions released by Qad and Emad missiles would also have released their decoys to survive against Arrow 3 and SM-3. Once Emad missile's re-entry vehicle enters the atmosphere, they can start to maneuver and alter their trajectory. This is done to increase precision and to perform random evasive maneuvering. Since Israel can't launch an interceptor for each of the several submunitions of Qaeda, those inaccurate warheads are immune to the interceptors. However, Emad would rely on a short atmospheric flight time enabled by a steep dive trajectory plus random evasive maneuvering. Arrow 2, Patriot and David Sling are the systems that tried to intercept the maneuvering Emad's re-entry vehicles. Emad missiles were also faster than glowing objects descending and impacting at 6 to 7 times the speed of sound. The slow glowing objects seem to be the sub-munitions of Qaeda, and the slow objects in flame were likely to be separated empty booster stages. Another missile, Desful, was apparently launched against Israeli targets in the occupied Golan Heights. The Desful missile is limited to the northeast part of the occupied Palestinian territories by its maximum range, and can exploit the distance to Israeli missile defense barriers to perform its mission at Israel's periphery. No information about those strikes is available, but the low-cost Desful missile would avoid coming within Arrow 3 range by flying a relatively low trajectory. To counter endo-atmospheric interceptors like Arrow 2, Patriot and David Sling's Stunner, it would randomly maneuver similar to a Emad missile. The most advanced ballistic missile known to have been used in the operation is the Khaybar Shekan. This missile completely avoids Arrow 3 and SM-3 interceptors by flying inside the very upper layers of the atmosphere. Once close to the Arrow 2, Patriot and David Sling, it further descends to engage with the Earth's atmosphere to begin random evasive maneuvering by its fins. Khaybar Shekan performs this maneuvering in the upper atmosphere layers, and once it has slowed down to a certain threshold speed, it dives down at a steep angle. Since it depends on the selected trajectory, its impact speed can be 5 times the speed of sound, combined with prior maneuvering. Some classify it as Iran's first hypersonic missile. Khaybar Shekan and Emad are candidates for some of the very clear impacts, foremost at least 5 successive hits seen in one of the videos. Other missiles that might have participated are the Rezwan and the Haj Qasem, but no clear launch or spent booster footage of those has appeared as of now. The targets were Israeli air bases, which represent difficult, highly protected, high-value assets of the Israeli regime. This target would not be a completely disproportionate response, achieve the retaliation objective, and display Iran's missile capabilities to Israel for strategic reasons. The website Axios has also covered the same story and tells us more. Israel in the past often responded disproportionately against others due to its military might. Its ballistic missile defense protected its critical military sites against ballistic missiles, and its air force and defense systems, like the Iron Dome, countered air-breathing threats like bomber aircraft. In that sense, it felt a high level of safety against any external attack, attracting multi-billion-dollar investments for technology giants like Intel. Israel's overmatch in capability allowed for such fragile industries to come to the conflict region. The inability to protect a critical high-value object, like the Nevatim airbase, means Iran has the capability to repeat such a salvo against any object in the occupied Palestinian territories. Iran already displayed the accuracy and destructive power of its ballistic missiles in the salvo against the Ain al-Assad airbase, a U.S. military base in Iraq, which was a soft target. Hence, independent of the damage caused, which had to be limited to resemble a proportional response in some way, Iran displayed the capability very clearly and strongly. From the limited information available on the targets that were hit in the occupied Palestinian territories, we see that taxiway sections and aprons were hit in a systematic manner. This is what someone would do if it doesn't want to cause heavy financial damage and keep the response near proportional. There is still only limited information about what was hit at the Nevatim Air Base or even the Ramon Air Base in the occupied Golan Heights amid a complete information blackout imposed by the Israeli regime. Another key aspect of the operation was the effort Iran forced upon the regime involving aircraft and its operation costs to counter drones and cruise missiles with air-to-air missiles. Only Israel clearly knows how many interceptors were spent in the observed Ripple launchers. Only Israel knows about the reserves it has of these several times more expensive counters to the threat. Only Israel knows how well each of the systems, the Arrow 3 and the Arrow 2, the Patriot and David Sling, performed and which regions they cover at what quality.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Raditu billahi rabba wa bil islam dina.
By Allah's name, we start. Salamun alaikum and welcome to another new episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio.
أرجو رضاك يا الله أنت الرحيم يا الله هبني عطاك يا الله أنت الكريم منك العطاء يا الله أنت العظيم يا الله فيك الرجاء يا الله أنت الحليم
الرحمن الستار ملك الملك الغفار الوهاب المنان المتعال.
Let's look at the calendar first. Today, Thursday, 9th of Shawwal, 1445 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 30th of Farvardin, 1403 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 15th of April, 2024 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Let's bless this moment by recitation of chapter Al-Baqarah, verse 136.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. قولوا آمنا بالله وما أنزل إلينا وما أنزل إلى إبراهيم وإسماعيل وإسحاق ويعقوب والأسباط وما أوتي موسى وعيسى وما أوتي النبيون من ربهم لا نفرق بين أحد منهم لا نفرق بين أحد منهم ونحن له مسلمون.
Say, O believers, we have believed in Allah and what has been revealed to us, and what has been revealed to Abraham and Ishmael and Isaac and Jacob and the descendants, and what was given to Moses and Jesus, and what was given to the prophets from their Lord. We make no distinction between any of them, and we are Muslims in submission to Him.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The true believers in pure faith are those who follow the pure monotheistic creed. The monotheism which has never been tainted with any form of polytheism. The most important basic principle for recognizing the pure religion from the corrupted ones is by keeping in mind this very perfect creed of monotheism. Islam instructs us not to make decision between the divine prophets and to respect their religion totally because the fundamental principles of all divine religions are entirely the same.
Shukran ya Rabbi, shukran. Hadayta qalbi, shukran. Wa tadarbi, shukran. Shukran ya Rabbi,
shukran ya Rabbi, shukran. هديت قلبي شكرا نورت دربي شكرا شكرا يا رب يا منزل القرآن يا خالق الإنسان يا رب يا رحمن شكرا يا رب.
This is today's special and we're going to speak about what after Ramadan? The end of Ramadan reminds us with the closeness of death. The end of Ramadan reminds us with the saying of the Prophet, living this world like a stranger or a bypasser. If you wake up, don't wait for the evening, and if you reach the evening, don't wait for the morning. Take advantage of your good health and your life. So each one of us should ask himself these questions. What have I gained from this month? Have I passed the test? Do I deserve to get diploma of taqwa? Whoever finds goodness, then let him praise Allah, and whoever finds something else, let him work hard to reform himself and seek the help from Allah. What is there after Ramadan? Do the lessons of Ramadan end with it or continue after it?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. This is Ali, your host from IRB English Radio. We hope you join us, inshallah, and stay tuned till the end of this show. Today, we are going to talk about the strategies for preserving the spiritual effects of Ramadan, the holy month of Ramadan, throughout the year. Now, we need to train ourselves in servitude. So, what do we mean by training in servitude? Something has been inaugurated in the holy month of Ramadan. It needs to be established after this month and to be preserved and kept. The blessed month of Ramadan is a month of training in servitude. To preserve the effects of servitude, continuing the practice and maintaining consistency is very important. And religious texts or religious sources, emphasis has been placed on the continuity of good deeds. For example, Imam Baqir alayhi salam has said, "The most beloved action to God is the one that the servant continues to do, no matter how small it is." From a scientific and experiential perspective, it is also proven that for the consolidation of moral and spiritual qualities, a two-step process must be followed: formation and stabilization. This is similar to the skills that humans acquire. Athletes, Quran memorizers, and other individuals who have a specific skill, if they stop practicing for a while, they lose their skill.
IRIB English Radio presents today's special, Every Day for 15 Minutes.
Be like the sun, shining with light. Be like a rose, spreading its fragrance in every palm.
Today's special.
Be like the earth, humble and wise. Be like the rain, pouring all your love to every soul.
You're listening to today's special, and this is another tip to keep Ramadan spirits alive. Evaluate yourself weekly. This helps you see the bigger picture. You'll be able to evaluate on a more long-term level how well you've been keeping your habit in practice. You can do the same thing on a monthly and yearly basis. For those who are really into the technical aspect of self-evaluation, maybe you can make a graph to help you chart how well or not so well you've been keeping up with your good habits.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I when I have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You are the light that guides me through my darkest nights. Shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Life after Ramadan. This is our topic, and of course, continuity in worship is the key. We must try to incorporate a dhikr routine in our schedule. It is said that those whose hearts are alive are those whose hearts are constantly thinking about the Creator, those who remember Allah constantly, and those who have dead hearts are those who are neglectful of this. This dhikr doesn't have to be extensive to begin with. In order to get ourselves into any habit, we must take baby steps. This can then increase slowly. Tasbihat Lady Fatima itself is something which takes away tiredness. Hence why it was taught by our beloved Prophet to his daughter Fatima, when it tiredness goes. And after paying attention to our eating habits, when laziness departs, we will feel full of energy and will increase in our ibadah, endeavoring to make it beautiful. So we will want to increase our dhikr, our du'as, our Quran recitation, our voluntary prayers, and etc. By adding this simple dhikr routine into the schedule, we will gain so much, inshallah, not only physical, but most importantly, spiritually. It will help us a great deal in our journey to Allah.
Also see that it was a time to break away from the intensity of the acts of our desires and the wanting to sin, right? Sometimes we sin, or sometimes rather we break the laws because we realize that maybe people aren't looking at us, you know, people aren't around us, and we, you know, sometimes get to that level of breaking Allah's commandments. But this month of Ramadan again should have taught us a way to break that intensity of our desires. That yes, we have desires as human beings. Many things Allah put within us as human beings. But also we were shown in the month how to control those things. And how to control really our connection to the outside world and the passions and the desires that are there. And last but not least, one of the things that we learned from month of Ramadan and fasting is this, again, the focus on praying, on worship, on supplications. You know, the Quran was open for 30 days in this blessed month. And as we even recited in some of the du'as at the end of the month of Ramadan, that we made the du'a to Allah that we're not given this loss of the tawfiq in reciting the Quran. So this 30 days, when we read the Quran, when we thought about it, when we maybe read the translation, maybe when we read commentaries of the Quran, let's try not to leave it only for the month of Ramadan. Let's try to ensure that the Quran that we pulled off of the shelf on the first night of Ramadan isn't just put back onto the shelf to wait for the next year of the month of Ramadan. But this should be a continuous process of us always being in touch with the Quran, reciting the Quran, reading the translation of the Quran, reading the commentaries which are available, and thinking about the content of the Quran. Because again, this was the crux also of the month of Ramadan, when Allah told us that the month of Ramadan is that in which the Quran was revealed. as a guidance for humanity, and a bayinat, it is a clear guide, and it is a distinguisher, a furqan between right and wrong.
Thank you for listening to this episode of today's special. We leave you in Allah's protection and wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Ya Rahman, Ya Razzaq, Ya Ghaffar, Ya Qahhar, Ya Wahhab, Ya Tawwab. Ya Rahim, Ya Aziz, Ya Sami', Ya Basir, Ya Latif, Ya Khabir. حليم يا عظيم يا كبير يا حفيظ يا وكيل يا قوي يا متين.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
The Turret,
Part 1.
In the early hours of the morning of Wednesday, the 8th of January, 2020, 13 Iranian missiles destroyed the Ain al-Assad U.S. military base in Iraq. Before the attack, U.S. President Trump had warned that if Iran attacks U.S. interests, Washington will target 52 sites in the country. And people across the world have for long wondered why the U.S. did not respond to Iran's missile attack. The outbreak of war between governments had never been as easy and accessible as in World War II. In this conflict, warring countries, big and small, came under attack, and the military industry had become so advanced that nothing, including huge numbers of manpower, the size of countries, and even unimaginable geographical distances, could prevent fierce enemy attacks. Between 1939 and 1945, the war, which involved more than 30 countries from different continents, had killed over 60 million people and caused huge and irreversible amounts of damage in all the countries involved. The catastrophe caused by the Second World War was so great that all governments began to think of ways to prevent such an event from happening again. Among the solutions was the establishment of the United Nations and other global alliances. But superpowers were looking for ways to come up with more effective deterrent measures. Two years after the outbreak of the conflict, the U.S. officially entered the war in 1941 when it was directly attacked by Japanese forces in Pearl Harbor. With the success of the Manhattan Project, which had led to the development of an atomic bomb by the U.S., in 1945, American forces attacked two of Japan's major cities. The nuclear attacks on Hiroshima and Nagasaki marked the end of the war, but the atomic bomb had a far greater impact. The catastrophes in Hiroshima and Nagasaki effectively provided security for the U.S. because it carried the message that any attack would lead to a nuclear response. The deterrence of military and nuclear power was so great that the role of organizations such as the UN was overshadowed and faded away. Meanwhile, the Soviet Union, with the help of German scientists, also developed nuclear bombs so that they could match the dominance of the US, and thus began a new era in human history. The arms race between the two superpowers of the world was the beginning of the Cold War era. During this time, neither the US nor the Soviet Union had an appetite for war, even though the two sides were fiercely hostile towards one another. Instead, they focused on strengthening their military, increasing their arsenal of weapons, and stockpiling nuclear warheads. During this period, weaker countries were forced to side with one of the superpowers in order to avoid overt and covert attacks. The Eastern and Western blocs emerged, and due to the close relations the Pahlavi royal court had with the US, it became a member of the Western bloc.
We particularly welcome you and the Empress as good friends and old friends.
The Pahlavi dynasty was so subservient to the U.S. that Washington honored the regime by naming it the Gendarme of the Region. But with the Islamic Revolution of the Iranian people and the overthrow of the imperial regime, a new system of governance emerged in Iran, which had chanted neither West nor East from the beginning. The bipolar world now faced a new phenomenon called the Islamic Republic. The new system did not intend to follow the bipolar structure of the world and claimed to present a new discourse. A discourse opposed to superiority and arrogance, which made no distinction between the East and the West. It was unacceptable to the U.S. to lose one of the countries it had under its control, and so, from the very beginning, Washington showed its hostility towards the Islamic Republic in different ways. One of the first steps the U.S. took was imposing an arms embargo on Iran to weaken its military strength. Following the sanctions and less than 2 years after the revolution, Iraq's president Saddam Hussein, who had long dreamt of gaining control of the Persian Gulf, launches a full-scale attack on Iran, hoping to invade the country, which was deprived of military weapons, in a one-week period. Even though Iran does not possess much deterrent power militarily, the leader of the revolution calls on the masses to mobilize and help the country's limited military force. Iraq's mechanized infantry, which is not expecting to encounter the mobilization of the masses, is grounded and loses the initiative it had gained after a few days. As the war drags on, Iranian forces succeed in shifting the balance of power in their favor and push back the Ba'athist forces. Saddam, who had dreamt of invading Iran in a week, is now caught up in a long war of attrition. The consecutive victories of the Iranian forces on the battlefields lead Saddam to resort to another kind of military strategy. From the early days of the war, he had shown that he did not shy away from bombing residential border cities. In 1984, he began a campaign of heavy air raids, missile attacks, and artillery shelling on major cities and urban areas in Iran, which effectively began the War of the Cities. Despite harsh sanctions imposed by arrogant powers, Iran's diplomatic efforts pay off, and Tehran is able to buy a number of missiles from Libya. Iran's first missiles are launched by a team from Libya. These initial strikes prove the deterrent power of missiles. After a while, under pressure from Iran's enemies, Libya refuses to launch any more attacks, and a small Iranian team decides to take matters into its own hand. When war broke out, Iranian forces realized their limited defense and military resources. Therefore, efforts were made to use the local knowledge of revolutionary forces in universities and other scientific centers in preparing and producing the equipment needed for war. Work on rockets was among the initial projects, and with the arrival of missiles, reverse engineering was also put on the agenda. The reverse engineering of high-tech missiles required a certain audacity which Iranians possessed. After Libya, Iran purchased a limited number of missiles from North Korea. Iran's missile units fire 88 missiles at designated targets in Iraq during the 6 series of raids in the War of the Cities. The war comes to an end, and Iran walks away with a commendable record and valuable experiences, despite all its limitations. Iranian engineering and production forces also succeed in achieving other magnificent results, such as the production of the Nazeat rocket, which was used toward the end of the war. For those who knew Saddam was a puppet of the U.S., it was obvious that the end of the war and Iraq's defeat would not prevent the U.S. from looking into alternative options to bring Iran to its knees. During the war, the U.S. had its military fleet present in the main waterway junctions in the Persian Gulf with the excuse of providing energy security. In 1990, with the occupation of Kuwait by Iraq, the Americans found a new excuse and increased their forces and military fleet to retake Kuwait. After the expulsion of the Iraqis from Kuwait, the U.S. forces maintained their presence in the Persian Gulf. Despite Iran's victory in the Iraqi-imposed war, the country had suffered irreparable damage. But at the same time, the war initiated the establishment of Iran's defensive infrastructures. These infrastructures played a key role in strengthening Iran's defensive approach. Research and studies began in the production of defensive weaponry in different fields, but the most significant focus was placed on activities in the missile sector. The round-the-clock efforts of forces who were constantly trying to achieve specific goals reduced complexities with the systematic management of commanders and the all-out support of the leader of the Islamic Revolution.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.